You're listening to The Liberty Beat, your daily source for Liberty news and activist updates. Online at thelibertybeat.com. John Bush here with your Liberty Beat for February 6th, 2013. Gold opened today at $1,676, silver at $31.89, and Bitcoin is trading at $20.92. Today's edition of the Liberty Beat is sponsored by Central Texas Gunworks, specializing in handgun defense training, concealed handgun courses, and firearm sales. Online at CentralTexasGunworks.com. And now the news. Uncomfortable with the Obama administration's use of deadly drones, a growing number in Congress is looking to limit America's authority to kill suspected terrorists, even U.S. citizens. The Democratic-led outcry was emboldened by the revelation in a newly surfaced Justice Department memo that shows drones can strike against a wider range of threats with less evidence than previously believed. The drone program, which has been used from Pakistan across the Middle East and into North Africa to find and kill an unknown number of suspected terrorists, is expected to be a topic of debate when the Senate Intelligence Committee grills John Brennan, the White House's pick for CIA chief, at a hearing Thursday. Too much drama? Boredom and scads of irrelevant information are just some of the reasons Facebook users give for taking a break from the world's biggest social networking site for weeks at a time, according to a new study. A report from the Pew Research Center's Internet in America Life Project found that some 61% of Facebook users had taken a hiatus of at least several weeks for myriad of reasons, whether they were wary from an onslaught of gossip or, for the more pious, the arrival of Lent. Yet the use of Facebook, whether constant or not, is pervasive in America. Of the American adults who use the Internet, 67% are on Facebook, Pew found. That compares with 20% who use LinkedIn and 16% who are on Twitter. Charlottesville, Virginia has become the first city in the United States to formally pass an anti-drone resolution. The resolution passed by a 3-2 vote and was brought to the city council by activist David Swanson and the Rutherford Institute, a civil liberties group based in the city. The measure also endorses a proposed 2-year moratorium on drones in Virginia. Personal information of some 4,000 people in the banking industry, including bank officers, was posted online Sunday by the hacker collective Anonymous. The list was initially posted to the website for the Alabama Criminal Justice Information Center, then apparently taken down by that site's operators. The ACJIC did not respond to a request for comment about the incident. However, the list was also posted elsewhere online and remains available through Google's WebCache. The Liberty Beat is sponsored in part by Sovereign Living, illuminating your path to self-sufficiency. Online at sovereignliving.tv. And by Brave New Books, specializing in free-thinking material for free people since 2006. Online at bravenewbookstore.com.
Truth News Radio. And for the second hour of today's show, I've got a really interesting discussion lined up for you. I want to talk about the way in which we use the internet. I want to reflect on kind of the last 20 years or so of human history. I want to kind of mentally go back in time and think about it again. Think about what we started off with the internet. Think about what we've got now. And the aim of this is to try and understand where we've gone right and where we've gone wrong. Because I think that a lot of things have gone really well, and we've developed some amazing capabilities, and some great tools have been created through human industry for actually extending what we can do with the massive networking capability that is the internet. But then we've fallen into some traps, and those traps have been created by corporatism and by government interference, and have led to a kind of a scenario where we're being caught in honey traps. These honey traps are represented by monolithic pieces of software which have been deployed on the internet by very, very large companies, and often given to us for free. And in some ways, they've enhanced our lives and been really, really useful and great. But in other ways, they've kind of, they've channeled us into one direction, they've herded us in one direction, and they've given us they've given the powers that be an opportunity to interfere and snoop and actually control what we do, which is the exact opposite of what the freedom of the internet is really all about. It's kind of an irony. It's a bit of a paradox. And I want to explore all of that. And I'm going to do so with the help of my great friend, Josh Jackson, who now joins us from his studios in Berlin, Germany. Josh, welcome to the show.
G'day, Harold. How are you? And g'day, Lou.
Good day indeed. So, Josh, what do you make of my introduction there?
Yeah, I mean, I love looking back in the history of the internet. I think it's I really find that the internet is, you know, it is one of the most wonderful and necessary tools to the common good, to the common man and woman, to be politically correct.
Indeed.
You know, it really is such an amazing invention, if you will. It's so grand. There's no way. I mean, could you imagine in the 60s being able to say to someone, oh, you know what, in the future you can call anywhere in the world for free and see someone else while they're talking to you and have group conferences, no need to fly anywhere, to be able to share information like a book or an audio piece of audio in an instant, get a new album in an instant, you know, and for free. I mean, the grandness of information. You know, I heard somewhere that that people are on average soaking in more information than people in the 50s would in a whole year. They would soak in a day now, because when the general surfer looks, he's literally or she's literally just surfing link after link. And then, you know, we all know it. We go researching something, and then 2 hours later, we're in some strange part of the web soaking in some random information which we just would never have really, you know, you would have had to go to some university research facility.
You would have had to traverse the libraries of the world. You would have had to physically go from library to library to find the information that is now instantly available, including, you know, audio, visual, and books.
And if you did, I mean, if you did go to a library, you sort of, you pick out a subject and you're kind of stuck on that subject because the book isn't hyperlinked. So, you know, you read the whole book and then you sort of look around the now, what else interests, look around the library, what else interests me? So it changes the dynamic of learning and of, well, of just information finding.
And really, really good point there. And, you know, one of the most important aspects of this revolution, of course, you know, it happened in stages like all revolutions do, but the I guess the key transformative point of that revolution was not the creation of the internet itself, which actually happened long before. It was the creation of this layer of the internet called the World Wide Web. And yeah. And that is what most people associate with the internet. In a lot of people's minds, web and internet are the same thing. They're not. The internet is an underlying network, and the internet has been around since the 70s. But until the late 1980s, early 1990s, the internet was really just a network for communication between government institutions and universities, initially
in
defence.
The word internet only came in 1982.
Right, it only began to be used as that term in 1982. That's interesting. And the World Wide Web was actually invented in 1989, and it didn't become known until about 1994. It was a, you know, subterranean thing that developed for a few years, and then kind of exploded into popular awareness in between 1994 and 1995. But yeah, sorry.
Let's
continue.
Go right back to where we started, and that's just between a research project agency called ARPA, basically went online, in quotes, because there was no such thing before, in 1969, December, and connected four major universities together. And that was the first network.
Right.
But it was designed for, you know, education and government organizations to sort of communicate together. But it then, you know, very quickly was thought about, well, how do we stop a military attack destroying any communications systems?
And the power of that decentralized structure, whether the flexibility of that was what made it so enduring.
Yeah, and this is why sometimes I think, well, you know, some of these things like DARPA and NSA, they sometimes create things that are actually good for the common people. You know, inadvertently, because NSA brought us things like Tor,
Well, of course, I mean, you know, World War II brought us a huge range of technologies and improvements and things that didn't exist before. And I've often reflected on that. You know, it's like this horrific war that killed 100 million people actually then spawned all these incredible developments. Certainly the military, I don't know. I mean, we could spend a whole hour kind of reflecting on that, or whether that's good or bad, or what the heck is going on in terms of human cultural, you know, evolution. But it is bizarre, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, what it does is it forces people to be to really create and be as creative as possible, because if you aren't, your whole family dies. You know.
Yeah.
So as a society, I mean, you can see it. The Aboriginal cultures in Australia generally were quite peaceful in terms of warring. They didn't really have much outside threats. There was probably inner threats, but generally outside threats there weren't. Whereas you look at the Maori culture, they were a lot more warry within the island. But you see that that generally, if you have a look in Western civilization over in Europe, there was just constant war. It was constant. It was constantly people invading you. So you really had to sort your crap out. And but by the time, you know, we're here in countries in the West, or in the East as well. I mean, you know, other parts of the world which had a lot of war, creating piano concertos and all sorts of stuff. And back in Australia, they really were still tribal. And that's not to say it's a bad thing. It was just a different fork of human.
Of course, that argument was often used to prove the superiority of the Western civilization, and particularly the British Empire. I mean, that actually was used to prove superiority. I think these days.
But it's nothing about superiority. I mean, it's simply a different fork of. I mean, you know, it's. It's definitely superiority in a military way. I mean, you know, they won, in a spiritual or an understanding of people or a lifestyle, I don't see how it's any superior. I mean, you know, you can't compare nowadays because they've been absolutely destroyed, the Aboriginal culture. So, but back then. You know, there was quite sophisticated. It's just that white settlers didn't really understand it at all.
Indeed.
And didn't wish to understand it either.
But anyway, we digress, and it's very easy to do. Let me just turn back to this question about the internet and the World Wide Web, because when you started off your little description there, your little history, you were reflecting on the power that we now have to get information on virtually any topic, virtually instantaneously, and that is largely
from many sources,
and that is largely through the World Wide Web. And what is the World Wide Web? Well, it is actually just a way of people communicating. It actually is. It all started with this amazing language, this what they call a markup language called HTML, which is just like a machine language, which allows information to be put on a computer in a meaningful, organized, visually appealing way to be shared between one person and another person. And it's incredibly simple, actually. It's incredibly elegant in that sense, which I think is its power, because when this markup language was released to the general public, it was easy enough for just about anyone to create their own web page. And that's what made the internet explode. And that's what, when we come back from the break, I really want to get into the psychology of that so we can really understand it. It was a genius creation, right? It was the ability to have, we had this network, we had already the ability to communicate, but HTML came along and was just simply a way of people being able to put a page up that someone else could read, and it could be done quickly and easily, and you didn't have to have a degree in computer science to do it.
Yeah,
and that's why the internet exploded, because you got people voluntarily, without any remuneration. They weren't doing it for money. They were doing it for interest, for the love of it, for the passion of it. They started creating websites. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to get right into that in more depth. You're with Truth News Radio. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
All the talk about gun grabbing got you down? How would you like to be the proud owner of a brand new AR-15? Then go to LogosRadioNetwork.com and enter the drawing to win a free Rock River AR-15, sponsored by Zombie Killers Ammo and Guns. Support Logos Radio Network by donating just $20 to their fundraiser, and you'll get your name entered into the drawing. Second place prize is a Spikes Tactical AR-15 Lower Receiver, sponsored by CentralTexasGunWorks.com. Every $20 you donate will put your name in the hat. So increase your chances of winning by increasing your donation. Winners must be eligible to lawfully own and possess these items. Please visit LogosRadioNetwork.com for details. If you love all the liberty-minded programming on Logos Radio Network, contribute to the fundraiser and secure your chance to win a Rock River AR-15, sponsored by Zombie Killers Ammo and Guns. Like them on Facebook at Zombie Killers LLC. Contest ends February 28th.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Maris Proven Method. Michael Maris has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Maris Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Maris banner, or email Michael Maris at yahoo.com.
That's ruleoflawradio.com, or email MICHAELMIRRAS at yahoo.com
to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Every man.
Welcome back with Truth News Radio. I'm talking today to Josh Jackson, and we're talking about the big picture. We're talking about the internet as a whole. We're talking about the World Wide Web, what it really means, where it's headed, where it's come from, what the strengths and failings are of the technology that has been created, which we are all using today. Now, Josh, you of course are a bit of a geek. You know, you love your gadgets and you love software, don't you? I mean, you're
big fan.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but you're also a thinking man, and you've got perspective. But I know that you like to dabble in a lot of new things that come out and try them out, and you're really into it. That's why I wanted to have this conversation with you today, because I know that that these are things that you've actually got a lot of fresh insights on. And so what's your comment on what I was saying there at the end of the last segment, talking about this? The internet was founded on the pioneering spirit of these people who just went out and built websites, and that's what made the internet great. And I'm thinking about what the internet has become now, and I'm thinking, well, it's still great, of course, and it's gone on to be greater and greater in many ways, but we mustn't lose that. It's really important that we don't lose that spirit of individual people just putting together a website, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, what really has happened is that firstly, we had people creating websites, HTML. They figured out how to program, and they loved it. They could talk about their cats or their you know, how to string a guitar, or they could talk about anything of their interest. But it was quite difficult to do, and there was a huge learning curve, and it was quite you really did need to have a ridiculously slow modem where you had to, take up your telephone line.
Yeah.
And
I think an important thing is that it got harder and harder. Like, it started off being pretty easy, but the specification of HTML got more complicated. And the things that people started doing with HTML became much more complicated very, very quickly. But yeah, anyway, please continue.
Yeah. But it was quite amazing the amount of, the amount of innovation at that time was huge. I mean, we had HTML and we had VRML, which was a virtual reality markup language, which developed by SGI, Silicon Graphics Network Computing, and they basically created a 3D internet where that was hyperlinkable and everything, but it just didn't take off because it was way ahead of its curve. But HTML allowed people to write these basically create a magazine, content for people to read about any subject. So it was amazing, but it was very difficult too. Then we had GeoCities pop up. It was a way for people to graphically. It was kind of the first Web 2.0. It was a way for the common person to jump online and actually make a website what interests them without having to do any coding, and it was then an explosion. I mean, there was, but it was the first centralization,
right,
of people's interests, and this is what happens, is that to basically become easier, which has a two-edged. Which is a very sharp two-edged knife, because when you make something easier, you generally centralize it. It brings more people and more diversification on board, which is fantastic. But at the same time, it brings less diversification in who's storing all this information and who has control of it and who gets to censor. Then what happens is later on, blogs come along, and this was the first time where PHP, which is a server-side.
Actually, can I just interject? I want you to continue with that thread, but I want to actually just fill in some of the middle parts there, because you jumped to blogs. But I want to basically cover a couple of other aspects which were really big at the beginning of the World Wide Web. In fact, some of which actually a little bit precede the World Wide Web. One is what they called bulletin board systems, which were known as BBSs, and the other was of course, online chat. Now, online chat was huge before the web, right? It was just a command line interface, right? And there were people doing that all over the world, and they were having an amazing time. You know, it was a social experience.
It still runs a massive portion of the internet.
It does.
IRC. Which is a very low-level protocol.
Yeah, yeah, and you can still just do it.
The whole Bitcoin network is run on IRC.
Wow, that's fascinating, isn't it? So these technologies existed, continue to exist, and of course they've continued in their own little path. There's a lot of people who are still on IRC. Of course, bulletin boards evolved into what then became called forums. When it became a web thing, the terminology started to change, and they were started to be called forums. And of course, forums were huge and still are. But there was a sort of a heyday of forums, wasn't there? There was like a time when forums were everything, but then other forms of communication came along. Although the forums are still there, and there are many, and they're very important in certain areas, you wouldn't think, I'll start a forum these days. You don't think, what am I going to do? I'm going to start a forum just to talk about something. You don't do that anymore. Because blogs came along, and blogs came along around about the early noughties. I'll let you continue from there. I just wanted to fill in some of those gaps.
Yeah, and very important gaps that I jumped over there. But forums still reigned supreme until basically social networking. But blogs were a way to take over from websites, because it was the first time you could install software on a server which allowed you to basically keep a diary, but also then blogging software, like blogging companies that allowed you, like Blogger.com, which was later bought out by Google, allowed you to basically go in and instantly have this great-looking site with a lot of functionality that was written by the crowd on the internet, more enthusiasts. Which you could just basically plonk onto your website and it would work. And you could keep this running dialogue, which people could then subscribe to and keep up with. But the problem was, again, you had more and more consolidation, especially as companies like Google and Yahoo and Microsoft start snacking on I've got a little bit of a runny nose with all this hay fever.
No worries.
As companies like the big three start snacking on these little upstarts, startups, which is great for the startup because, we just got bought out by Google.
Yeah, they did great out of it. They got a whole lump of money, yeah.
Yeah. You start to have this this consolidation of where all this data is stored. And I don't think it's that bad a thing. The problem is that I'll tell you why it's not that bad a thing, because anyone can still create a startup and join in and try to take them on.
Yeah, and it's none of these things are actually bad in themselves, especially in the early phases. It's all good, but badness starts to develop, and we're going to get into the badness very soon when we come back from this break. Stay with us.
I only have eyes for you.
Soon, store mannequins may be singing that tune. They're being outfitted with cameras to watch us while we shop. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, back with details after this.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights. Say no to surveillance and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This message is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
It's disturbing enough that Big Brother governments use facial recognition technology to identify and track people on the streets. Now clothing companies in Europe, Canada, and America are getting in on the act. So where do they hide the cameras? In the eyes of mannequins. That's right, those glamorous plastic ladies in the display windows may be watching you back. They're called eye seers, and their job is to log the age, gender, and race of passersby, so retailers can devise new schemes to get you to buy. But hang on, aren't mannequins spooky enough already? This is taking weird science to a whole new level. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht for StartPage.com, the world's most private search engine.
This is Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that fell on the afternoon of September 11th.
The government says that fire brought it down. However, 1,500 architects and engineers concluded it was a controlled demolition.
Over 6,000 of my fellow service members have given their lives.
And thousands of my fellow first responders are dying.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
I'm a structural engineer.
I'm a New York City correction officer.
I'm an Air Force pilot.
I'm a father who lost his son.
We're Americans, and we deserve the truth.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org today.
Thought that I was doing well, but the truth to you I'll tell. MSGs and GMO really ain't the way to go. There's a better way I've seen. It's called Tangy Tangerine. And we're all drinking Tangy Tangerine. Tangy Tangerine, Tangy Tangerine. We're all drinking Tangy Tangerine, Tangy Tangerine, Tangy Tangerine.
Order Beyond Tangy Tangerine and other great longevity products at LogosRadioNetwork.com by clicking on the Tangy Tangerine banner. Sign up as a preferred customer for wholesale prices or become a distributor and support LogosRadioNetwork.com. So what do you say, Elvis?
About technology, specifically the internet. We're talking about the good and the bad and the ugly. And, you know, we're kind of still in the good, but we're starting to now get into questions about what might be not so good. Now, Josh, you were sort of describing there how some of these amazing little startup creations were gobbled up by big players. And of course, we need to include email in that because, of course, Hotmail was one of the first of those that was gobbled up by Microsoft, and you know, Webmail, as it was called, was another tremendous tool. And I should have mentioned that earlier when I was talking about sort of the interim phases of all this, because Webmail was another very important new kind of stage in the power of using the internet, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was brought in. Well, it was introduced by Ray Tomlinson from 1972. So it's been around for a long, long time.
Oh, the email protocol. Level. Yes, of course, the email protocol. I was actually talking about webmail, but you're right. Email has been around since the 70s. Of course, email, absolutely intrinsic part of the internet forever. But then webmail, which was using a web page to access your email, you see? That's the beauty of that. You didn't. All you needed was your web browser. All you needed was your Netscape or, you know, whatever you were using back in those days. You just got onto your web browser. You didn't need to install Eudora or any of these funky applications. So, nope, just straight onto the web, put in your password. Hey, and I can check my email. That is so cool.
Yeah, and what's so important about that is that you started collecting really private conversations on other people's servers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because things that you generally put online, it was like you were broadcasting, you knew you were broadcasting, you knew, hey, you know, I'm not going to put anything that jeopardizes my privacy and what I hold sacred to only me and my loved ones. You started communicating to those people on these so-called private servers.
Fascinating, isn't it? But of course, you know, web hosting companies generally had their own webmail solution that was totally independent of the giants. I mean, I belong to this weird class of people, Josh, who has never used one of these centralized webmail solutions. I never used Hotmail and I've never used Gmail. You probably think I'm weird, but that's just the way I am.
Did you use Rocketmail?
I didn't. For quite a few years, I was working at a university and I had my own email account at the university. So I just used Eudora, which was the program which everyone used back in those days. And then later on, I started, you know, I can't even remember some stages in that. But for the last many years now, I've just basically used my web hosting company that I use has an email server that I connect to, that I configure either using a desktop like Outlook or using their own webmail client, which is really crappy. You know, it's called Squirrel Mail, actually. you may have seen it. A lot of web hosts provide it for free, and it's you know, it's not that great. But I chose to stay away from Gmail. And, you know, when I discovered that Gmail was basically, that Google was basically reading all your email for the purposes of advertising to you, I really thought, no, I really want to stay away from that now. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know about that until probably about 3 or 4 years ago that they were doing that. And it just cemented in me the idea that I didn't want to be providing them fodder for advertising material by my private emails. Thank you very much.
Well, the thing is that you're still hosting your mails on a server that's hosted by someone, that's owned by someone else. And this is the fundamental problem with email, is that unless you start up a server at your house and then you encrypt all that data, everything is going through a pipeline. But we'll get to that anyway. As email became more centralized, you had this really Hotmail and all these companies. And geez, I mean, it is good. I mean, it allowed people to communicate across the globe. People, that you could get your mother or your grandmother who didn't understand squat about technology could get online if you moved overseas for work or across the country, where you could instantly write letters. And of course, this was a huge threat to the postal service and all sorts. But it allowed the common man again to jump online and communicate. And by communicating, it's also a very dangerous thing when it comes to the state. The state doesn't like mass communication, as you can see with the Arab Spring.
Yeah.
Which was basically, you know, I mean, people could argue, well, that could happen. You know, revolutions have happened in the past without communication, of mass communication. But it made it a lot easier and a lot, and also allowed the rest of the world to watch and and hear from the ground what was going on, instead
Absolutely.
Of hearing what a centralized news network wanted to let you hear.
And
about.
It allows things to happen far quicker. It's like it's an accelerant, you know, it just accelerates everything. But you mentioned a point before, which I think is really important. I don't want to lose it, which is that a very critical point happened when the big corporates started gobbling up the startups. And this problem is really, really exacerbated with email, because it becomes private information then, which is now being scooped up. When Hotmail became that huge and then was bought by Microsoft, and then it just became so massive, it meant that Microsoft had personal information of millions upon millions of people. And that then becomes a big risk, doesn't it?
Well, definitely, definitely. But then you had this softening of people's approach to privacy when Gmail comes out. But Hotmail offers you, you know, 50 meg of data, so or whatever it was, I can't remember. And, you know, you had to delete your emails because, my mailbox is full. All of a sudden, Gmail comes up and offers you a whole gig of data.
Yeah, yeah. It was incredible.
And then 10 gig or something. Oh, it was 10 gig. I don't know. It was huge. It was so above the rest.
Mind-boggling.
It was like a skyscraper to a molehill.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, and it was this whole new approach to email. You know, it was a nice interface. It was clean. But, little caveat.
Yeah, a little catch.
A little robot has to read your email. It's only a robot. And it basically picks up keywords and serves you ads on the side. That's how we can offer you 10 gig of data space, and you never have to throw out anything again. I mean, so
it's really seductive and devious, isn't it? I mean, it's
it's still voluntary, and
it's voluntary in the sense that, well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's voluntary for you to use the roads. You know, you can get in your car and you don't have to use the road if you don't want to, but you're going to have trouble driving anywhere. But anyway, sorry, continue. Yeah.
No, I mean, but there is alternative.
Yeah, I know. As I've demonstrated, there are. But most people can't get their head around it. Most people find it's too hard. But anyway, do continue.
So this is, again, a psychological blow to privacy.
Yeah.
In the fact that, well, you know, we don't. No human sits there, and no human could possibly sit there reading emails and then selling ad space to, you know. It's all there, but it was a little like, it's a bit creepy, but okay. And the same thing will happen when Facebook started tagging pictures.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a little creepy. But Google tried to have a web bot, which it can do, I mean, and it probably does, that crawls the web. And
we're just going to break, Josh. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Do stay with us. Interesting discussion here on the internet and the good and the bad and the scary. We'll be right back.
Mr. President, members of Congress, you've been making a lot of noise about taking our guns away, but you might want to review history. 1835, Gonzales, Texas Territory. The authorities wanted to confiscate the big gun that protected that colony. You know what the people said? Come and take it. Because they were willing to fight for their freedom and their guns. So are we.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but I warn you. You'll have to pry it from our cold, dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time. Just like Gonzales, we're keeping our guns.
Are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with JurisDictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how in 24 hours, step by step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself. Thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. Jurisdictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-EASY.
Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today, and I've really been enjoying this discussion we're having about technology and the internet. It's gone so quick. Josh, I think we're going to have to continue this discussion and move through all the different phases and stages of things we want to talk about here, because it's a massive topic, isn't it?
Yeah, well, how much time have we got left?
Well, we're just about run out for today, but I think for future weeks we want to think about extending this discussion and trying to get maybe into some of the more the finer points of yeah. of some of the broad brush things that we've touched on today.
Well, also solutions.
Yes, I think, indeed. You know, we want to get into solutions.
A lot of the time, the truth, and justice movement really focuses on a lot of the negative points of everything, and warning, you know.
Yeah.
But I think what's constantly missing is solutions, and there are plenty of solutions that, especially now,
but coming if we can just continue, I want to still focus there on that point we were on there at the end of the last segment, where we're talking about the implications of handing over that amount of private confidential information to a mega corporation.
And being told that a robot's going to read it.
Yeah, and a lot of people probably weren't even aware of that. A lot of people, some people knew, some people didn't. But okay, the point I wanted to make when you were saying all that was that, you know, when the NSA started developing their tools, we've got to understand that what they were doing was probably using similar algorithms to what Google was using in searching through your content for information. It's all just about information, isn't it? And, of course, an interesting point to note is that Google was largely funded by DARPA, and the current CEO of Google was the ex-CEO of DARPA, and another massive government organization connected to the Defense Department. You know, really, the NSA, DARPA and Google, it's like a continuum in many ways, isn't it? I mean, we know there's a revolving door, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, with any of these huge industrial complexes, like, you know, the information industrial complex is quite consolidated. And it definitely ties in with security complex and the military complex. But it doesn't have to, and we, you know, the thing is with this whole Snowden case is that I hope it doesn't scare people into you know, saying their mind, saying what's on their mind, and exposing what's unjust. It's really important that people just keep on going, and at the meantime, looking at the new tools that are coming up, which are starting to eat away at these centralized mechanisms. And this is what the beauty of the open source community, because everything that we've talked about has been a honeypot because it's been free. Google's 10 gig is free. Robot reads your email, but it's free.
Yeah.
You can log on anywhere in the world, and all your emails are there. They're on your phone. And it's convenient, and it's free. But there's another free, and that free is set up by thousands of enthusiasts attacking a problem. And those enthusiasts say, we don't want money for this. We like it because it's fun to develop, and we like having an alternative. So GIMP is one for it sounds pretty strange, but it's a Photoshop alternative, and it's been around for years and years and years. It's been developed by thousands of people over the years.
And of course, let's not forget the old shareware too. Shareware was a bit more of an earlier incarnation than open source, but there's still a lot of products that are essentially sold as shareware, even though they're not fully open sourced. The people who've developed them have said, you know, we'd like you to give us money, but guess what? If you don't want to pay us, you can still have it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because somehow there is an economy built around this type of thing. I mean, I use a lot of free software myself. In fact, this very show you're listening to is edited on a shareware-type program called Reaper, which I still haven't bought a license for. Oh, God, I'm a naughty boy, aren't I? I mean, I should have by now, you know what I mean? But I just, you know, this is a non-profit show. It's a non-profit show, folks, so far, anyway. I've put so much of my own money into this show. I don't feel guilty about not having paid for the audio software that I use. But it's a tremendous program, Reaper. It's a fully professional audio, digital audio production station, with all your effects and tracks and everything you could possibly want.
So there was all these incarnations of where, you know, you had freeware, shareware, nagware.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
basically nagged you every time just to, I don't know, do something for them. And you're right, that was before the open source. And the open source movement was more about online software.
Yeah, and it was really about exposing the full digital code base, the engine.
The Lego blocks.
That would actually allow you to go in and maybe re-engineer that piece of software to do new things, to change it however you want. It wasn't just giving you the product, it was giving you the underlying machinery as well.
Yeah, yeah. Which is very important.
Yeah, that was crucial. That was crucial to the development of Linux, because if Linux had not been open sourced like that, you wouldn't now have the internet. The internet, we could have spent a whole hour just talking about Linux, couldn't we? Because the open source nature of Linux is what allowed the internet to take off.
It was.
Yeah.
And this is again when people say, "Oh, don't copy. Copying's bad." If it wasn't for copying, we wouldn't have the internet, because the whole reason. We have, and people say, "Oh, who uses Linux?" The fact is, everyone uses it.
Yeah,
everyone uses it because most servers run it.
And of course, if you own a Mac, you know it's powering your Macintosh. You know, it's there. It's the underlying operating system of the Mac suite of products.
Yeah, it's the base, and. Yeah. We had a lot of different flavors of Linux. We had Irix, which was on the Oscillon Graphics. We had some other one, which was on Sun Microsystems. You have all these different flavors because people can fork, what's called forking the code. So you get the source code, which is this open source, and you make your own version of it. And this is what Herod was talking about earlier, where you could just take the code and change it in some way. But you actually create a whole new product.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what all the variants
of, yeah, with the original.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you often see products that that start out as proprietary products that then become open sourced at a certain point, or some go the other way. For example, Red Hat Linux was actually open source and then went proprietary. But then there was another variant of it, I think, called Fedora, which is still open source. And so there's any number of variations on this way of approaching it. But I guess the really important thing to bear in mind is that what open source does is it potentially gives power back to the entrepreneurial individual. And remember, when we talk about freedom on this show, when we talk about liberty, one of the most key ingredients of liberty is the freedom of individuals to be able to realize their own potential. And that's what you don't have when you have a monopolized corporatist system like we have now, where all products and services tend to be consolidated into just, you know, one or two players for each major area. You know, they dominate the market and no one else can compete.
Yeah. But you know, all this stuff is breaking down a lot now, and I think they can compete. It's just that, and more as more and more people worry about privacy and just sort of get a bit peeved by Facebook. But it's not only peeved. Like, generally, what happens is you get the next generation, and it's already starting to happen. There was a startup that let you do something on your phones. Anyway, they had Facebook, log in with Facebook, and it was aimed at the teenage group. And I let you take photos. It was some sort of a photo app, photo sharing app.
Yeah.
Log in with Facebook. Now, nobody used it. And then they kept on getting emails saying, can you just create your own login? Because we don't use Facebook. And they were like, what, really? Okay, well, and they sort of did it as a, oh, okay, we'll put our own login so you can create your own username. Anyway, yeah, as soon as they did, it skyrocketed in the teenage circles. Why? Because when they interviewed them and asked that question, why?
Yeah.
They said, well, I don't want to be using a social network where all my teachers and my family and my mum and dad are on there, and it's uncool. It's crap. I'm bored of it. I'm bored. Bored. And this is what, you know, really drives change, is that, quite frankly, it's the whims of the teenager just going, oh, it's so uncool now. It's so boring. And you know, we've all done it when we were teenagers on certain things. We just rebelled against what the last generation. I mean, you see it with you know, Apple's iPhone. It was dominating the market. Teenagers now, they don't want that. They don't want their old hand down.
Yeah.
You know, every grandma's got an iPhone. Stuff that. I want something individual.
And you know,
that's why they're going Android.
I really wanted to talk about Facebook in the show. We only just started to touch on it now. We're at the end of the hour. We're going to come back and talk about Facebook in depth. Josh, thanks for coming on this week. It's been great talking
to you. Cheers, mate.
Cheers. Truth News Australia signing off for another week. We'll be back next week. We'll see you then.
Would you like to make more definite progress in your walk with God? Bibles for America is offering a free study Bible and a set of free Christian books that can really help. The New Testament Recovery Version is one of the most comprehensive study Bibles available today. It's an accurate translation, and it contains thousands of footnotes that will help you to know God and to know the meaning of life. The free books are a three-volume set called Basic Elements of the Christian Life. Chapter by chapter, Basic Elements of the Christian Life clearly presents God's plan of salvation, growing in Christ, and how to build up the church. To order your free New Testament Recovery Version and Basic Elements of the Christian Life, call Bibles for America toll-free at 888-551-0102. That's 888-551-0102. Or visit us online at bfa.org.
Looking for some truth? You found it. LogosRadioNetwork.com.